Bad News by Orphan Account. Read by Sophie. A hockey RPF fanfiction. Relationship, Sidney Crosby, Claude Giroux. The fanfiction is rated teen enough by the writer, but I have to admit, I would have rated it mature. Additional tags for 2015 IIHF Ice Hockey World Championships and Not Sad. Summary. If normal people are butter knives, Sid is a broadsword.
The stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came.
As soon as Sid confirms that he's going to Worlds, Claude thinks, this is gonna be fucked. At first, it is. He's never seen Sid out of his gear, as a person and not a player, and it doesn't help that Sid seems incapable of looking him in the eye. It's extra weird because the other guys know exactly who and what they are, and seem bent on keeping them apart off the ice, which is embarrassing because it means that he definitely talked about it. Like, okay guys, don't let Sid and Claude kill each other, like they're two snot-nosed brats who don't play well with others. Prior to playing against him, Sidney Crosby was just another memory Claude had from 2005, right alongside Mariah Carey and George Bush. There was that GQ shoot, where he had the face of a 14-year-old, but the body of a hot, non-threatening Tiger Beat centerfold, a fresh-faced paragon of virtue. The good Canadian boy who was going to save hockey. Growing up, he was a symbol of every minor nuisance of Anglo-Canada, this derpy maritimer who could hardly speak a lick of French, the foil to Claude's wonky smile and ginger curls, a sweet, humble boy who dedicated his life to hockey. Claude always had to try, and even then he was never the best. Sid did his first TV interview when he was 7, which isn't to say he didn't try, but it was different. Claude never hated Sid until Sid hated him. He was just always around. Claude doesn't even get the option to be mean or not mean to Sid because he hasn't said 2 non-hockey words to him the entire time they've been in Prague. He can't tell if it's Sid's doing or the careful orchestration of their teammates, but they're never alone. Things get weirder when they realize they play really, really good hockey together. Their chemistry crackles, and they don't talk much about it, or really at all, just treat it like, good, this is nice, this is good for the team. They know where the other is, like a sixth sense after so many years of looking forward to playing each other with the combined thrill and dread of a hot date and a root canal. Once, on the bench, Spets bangs his shoulder against Claude's and says, you and Sid, huh? And Claude just sucks his teeth at him. One of the first real things they say to each other is at dinner where, due to a shuffling of chairs and a few drinks, they end up sitting together and it's about Sid's French. Claude doesn't remember how it got started. Something Bernsey said, but he tells Sid, I've heard it in an interview, your French, so bad my ears bleed. Bernsey starts laughing, and he instantly regrets it. It's not like Sid is known for his sense of humor, or not taking things seriously. But Sid laughs, this ridiculous, terrible hunk of a giggle that Claude has never heard before. It's so bad, Sid agrees. I knew it in school, right? But now it's just anytime anyone makes me speak it, so embarrassed. Same, Bernsey chimes in from Claude's other side. You're an embarrassment to our people. Well, hey, Claude says, looking right at Sid for the first time all night, his strong jaw, his nose enormous in profile. Let me know if you want lessons, eh? We'll get the little group together. Sid almost shoves at him, but his elbow stops, just short of contact. Shut up, no. Claude shrugs theatrically. Your loss. Somewhere between hearing his terrible laugh and fighting with him to pay the table stab, Claude learns that Sid isn't as bad as he thought. He knew that he wouldn't be, there's no way, but learning that he's halfway funny and has a decent head on his shoulders is still a shock. The more they play together and the more they win, the more clearly Claude realizes that the only person in his life that he has ever felt this strongly about, for better or for worse, is Sid. He's never been able to stop thinking about him, and it's always been easy to call that hate. But to be more accurate, it's a churning mass of vitriol and jealousy and spit and fire, and at the end of the day, it all narrows down to mindless, gut-burning passion. Something that says, I can't stop thinking about you, and I always know where you are, and I want to get my hands on you. Whether it's his fist in his hair, or his knuckles in his teeth, or something much, much more dangerous and new. Hate is stupid and simple, and it was never that. That was just a part of the job. But the absence of negative feelings mean that they're just feelings now, still there, screaming in his head. And the uncertainty makes Claude wild, unhinged, insane. He thinks, this has to just be me. There's no way Sid is capable of this, because the thought of Sid burning like he is makes no sense. Sid is a human panic room, something with a purpose and zero inefficiencies, a walking soundbite, a good boy. The fact that Sid so openly hates Claude and the Flyers is basically the only inefficient thing about him, a chink in an otherwise flawless set of armor. It's one of those things that builds and builds until you're anxious and shaking with it, and then, at the last possible second, it happens, when you've run out of time to ignore it in. Leading up to the final game, he catches Sid's eyes more and always sees him looking back, his jaw set, their eyes locked, again and again. He thinks it's a hockey thing, but it could easily not be. Claude feels like he's going nuts. Which doesn't matter, because they win, and then everyone's nuts, and it doesn't matter anymore. He gets crushed in so many hugs that he doesn't know who's who, and everything is just the roar of the crowd and the other guys, the stink of sweat. He sees Sid through the throng of jerseys, and his whole face screwed up in a grin, and he slaps him on the shoulder and they half hug, Sid's hand fisted in the back of his jersey. His laugh is bright and loud in his ear over the echoing din of the arena. Everyone's screaming and drinking in the locker room, covered in confetti, all black slaps and hair pulling and chanting. No one under 25 has put their phone down for a second. Claude downs two beers in nothing flat and strips, joining the half of the room that's wearing nothing or slightly more. No one's even making an effort to get their shit together, so Claude just showers and drinks whatever's put in his hand and tries, half-heartedly, to stop the younger guys from making asses of themselves on social media. Sid's been on the other side of the room the whole time, completely mobbed, and Claude hasn't exactly been looking for him, but as he's getting his sweats up, he looks over his shoulder, and like he has been the entire week, Sid is looking back. His eyes flake down below Claude's waist, and back up. So fucking obvious. And Claude cinches up his sweats. Sid keeps looking and looking, and guys pass in between them, breaking the contact, but every time, Sid's still there, leaning near the door with his eyes trained on him. Sid's a weird guy, but Claude's not drunk enough to get this wrong. There's intent there. Intent to do what isn't important, but there's been this tension between them for almost 3 weeks, and Claude wants Sid to snap so that they can go back to their lives. He doesn't care if they have to talk or fight or what, but he's tired of thinking about it. He nods his head towards the door by Sid, not the one he came in through. Sid nods seriously and turns and leaves, and Claude sets his beer down and quickly follows, slaloming through the celebratory throng. The air of the hallway is thinner and cooler than the dressing room, and it's easier to breathe. His ears ring after the cacophony behind them, but he can still hear Sid's quiet, uncertain, from where he stands, in the middle of the hallway. It's not the main drag, and only half the hall lights are on, and Sith just standing there, a few feet away in deep shadow. Golden confetti glints in his hair, and he's mouth-breathing like an idiot, and Claude just wants. That's what this has been. He looks once over his shoulder, just quick, then fists his hands in Sid's shirt and runs him back into the opposite wall of the hallway, concrete under his back. Sid sucks a breath in and goes rigid, pupils huge, watching as Claude runs his hand down the flat of his abs and palms his half-hard dick through his shorts. Part of him expects to get hit in the teeth, but the other part knows. And maybe it's riding the high of the win and being almost but not quite drunk, but it's like he's never been more sure of anything that Sid's not going to hit him. He doesn't. He reaches down and jams his hand clumsily between Claude's legs in turn. And he's already embarrassingly hard, and it's fucking weird and humiliating, but he grinds his palm and Sid's getting harder, and walking away seems like less and less of an option. The thickness of Sid's body makes him feel scrawny and young, and he fucking loves it. It makes him want to get bigger, be better. Bite him. Hoots and footsteps come down the hallway from the dressing room, and Claude swears. Sid reaches out and grabs a knob of a nondescript door next to them, and it turns. It's a linen closet or a utility closet or something, big enough for two. And Sid, like a smart person who thinks that hiding like children is a better idea than trying to nonchalantly hide a hard-on, grabs Claude's wrist and pulls him into the closet. The door clicks shut behind them, and there are voices in the hallway. Shouts and cheers and loud chatter. Definitely Seguin. A bunch of others. The closet smells like laundry detergent and wet metal, and they can hear each other breathe, neither speaking, both waiting for something. Claude doesn't know what, but Sid thumbs at his bare hip. Claude grabs him through his shorts again, and he doesn't kiss him, but he presses his mouth to the pit of his throat and works him in his hand. Sid gasps shakily into his hair and gets his hand into his sweatpants and wraps his fingers around him, and Claude does the same, presses Sid back into a row of shelves, pants into his shoulder. He grabs a fistful of Sid's ass and drags him closer until they're wedged right up against each other. But then Sid smacks his hand to get him to stop jerking him off, pushes his shorts down further and turns around, not saying a fucking word. Claude pinches himself. Somehow, drunk on adrenaline and victory, thousands of miles away from anything he'd ever call home, this makes sense, and in the moment, he doesn't question it. Sid drips like a faucet, and Claude runs his hand over him, spits into his palm and lubes up, fingers shaking. He fists his hand in the back of Sid's shirt to have something to hold on to, and starts to sink in. It's not ideal, but he sees stars anyway, and the heat and tightness of Sid's body knocks the air out of his lungs. He folds and presses his head to Sid's back, still twisting at his shirt. Fuck, he pants. You're... Sid saves him the embarrassment of gushing by cutting him off with a groan, wrenching his arm back to tangle his fingers in Claude's hair and tug, not nicely, more like, come on, go. Later, Claude will be embarrassed. He'll remember how quickly and jerky and loud it was, how his hands dug at Sid's hips and ran over the swell of his ass, and thumbed at his spine, his shoulder blades, his bones. Now, the only thing going through his head is, I can't come first. As he feels Sid's forearm working as he jerks off, feels his pulse racing, his breath coming short. He revels in the sound of their skin like a teenager raised on porn, swears, spits, just goes for it, unthinking and unbridled. He keeps waiting for it, waiting for the second Sid comes to his senses and remembers it's Claude, and gains back whatever lost inhibition made him think this was a good idea. But he doesn't. His sneakers slip on the concrete as he tries to get his legs wider, and Claude's left thinking, "Christ, don't let me do this," and keeps doing it anyways, hands fumbling along the cut of muscle in Sid's sides, pushing his shirt up to get at his bare skin. "Oh, fuck," Sid chokes. "I'm coming." His whole body goes tight, and he comes into his own fist, dripping on the floor. Claude fucks him through it, and Sid doesn't make him stop when he's done. He just grabs at the shelves and holds on and breathes hard. Claude pounds into him for another half minute before he gets frantic and desperate and comes with a loud huff of pleasure buried inside him. In retrospect, he realizes dimly, he should have pulled out. Sid hangs his head between his shoulders and pants. Claude can just make him out in the dark, the stretch of his shirt across his back. He pulls out as carefully as he can, and Sid still hisses. Claude sees the pale flash of Sid's forearms as he yanks his short back up. Coming down from the wild, feverish euphoria of sex so quickly is as sobering as anything, and Claude almost panics, with no idea what to do now or how he's supposed to look Sid in the eye after this when he knows his cum is dripping down the backs of his thighs, to say fucking nothing of the rest of their lives, having to face stuff against him in front of the whole world. Claude looks up. Sid crushes their lips together. Claude freezes, holds his breath, squeezes his eyes shut. One of Sid's hands is burning hot on his forearm, clammy with sweat, and Claude kisses back. Sid can't kiss for shit, and Claude hates that he doesn't even mind. He draws his thick bottom lip between his and bites, and does everything he can not to think about how kissing means something completely different than sex, and what it means that the soles of his feet are burning, and his head is airy and loopy like after a hit. What it means that Sidney Crosby makes him feel fucking conquest when they're nowhere near a rink. Sid starts, his breath hot on Claude's mouth. But he stops. He grabs Claude's face and surges forward and kisses him again, hard enough to make their teeth hit, to make him stumble back a step and clutch at his arms. And then he's gone. Light carves into the tiny room, and Sid's silhouetted in the glare of the hall, half out the open door. "Wait a second before you leave," he whispers, then ducks out and shuts the door behind him, while Claude's ears are still rushing with static. "Right," he says to no one. In the whirlwind of press and fanfare that follows, they don't see each other much, and never alone. They don't exchange two words before they fly out of Prague and back to their respective lives. Claude decides that, quote-unquote, Sidney Crosby got fucked raw in a utility closet at Worlds would be a better joke if he weren't the punchline. Claude gets tested his first free day back home, which isn't for weeks. He drives all the way across the city to a clinic he's never been to, not that it matters, and jumps every time his phone rings in the week afterwards as he waits to hear back. He's not sure if it's because he thinks Sid might have something or because he thinks he does. Both possibilities, no matter how unlikely, are nauseating. He's an idiot. The clinic calls him back after what seems like a lifetime but is actually a week, and he's clean. He figured he would be. He's made some mistakes in his life, but he's not normally so stupid. But it's a relief. So, he reasons, this means that Sid is also clean, which is a weird, specific kind of relief. But there's the possibility that Sid was too neurotic or embarrassed to get tested and is sitting around stewing in fear over it. It's midnight, and Claude's lying in bed staring at his phone contacts. SC, one of them says. He doesn't remember the exact series of events that led to him getting Sid's number. A formality in the first days in Prague, where they all passed phones around to coordinate team bonding or what the fuck ever. He didn't get around to deleting it. So now, he types out, "I'm clean, if you're wondering," and stares at it. Proofreads it. He hits send and his stomach drops. If there's anything worse than addressing how you fucked someone in the blind haze of lust, it's addressing that it was unprotected. He puts his earphones in and lies there for a while, suddenly wide awake. Sid probably goes to sleep sober at 8 p.m. and gets up at 4 to shoot pucks into the sunrise or something, and there's a possibility that he won't reply at all. His phone vibrates on his chest, and it scares the hell out of him. Okay. Claude's quince at his phone. "I got tested," he sends back. The little ellipse bubble comes right up. "Okay, so did I." "Okay," Claude sends, and fumes. He's sitting up and shoves a pillow behind his back. "Don't be a dick about it." "I'm not." "Yeah, you are." "So what?" "So you kissed me, want to talk about that?" This time, he doesn't reply right away. Claude grits his teeth and regrets saying anything at all, and especially that. He gets a flash of anger and wishes he gave Sid crabs. Who fucking cares if he's gonna be petty about it? It was weird for both of them, and Claude's trying to be decent about it, and Sid's being a child. His phone vibes. "I don't need you mocking me." "What? I'm not." "Yes, you are. If you're going to blackmail me, just get over it. Tell me what you want." "How would I blackmail you? I fucked you. Goes both ways." Claude winces. He could have phrased that any other way. "Okay, listen," he goes on. "Just shut up. I'm not mad." "What does that mean?" "I don't know." "You kissed me back." "I know." "Maybe you want to talk about it? You texted me." "To tell you your dick's not gonna rot off, you're welcome." "Why did you do it? You weren't that drunk." Claude slides down in bed. He holds his phone above his face and thinks, "Great fucking question. Why did you?" "I don't know." "Me neither." That is sort of a lie. Claude doesn't know if it's a lie. He remembers the moment his hatred for Sid, or what he thought was hatred, dripped away and left whatever burning coal made him do what he did. It made sense at the time. It sort of still does. He takes a deep breath. "What now?" he asks. Sid's typing ellipse blinks on and off for the next 5 minutes. Claude almost nods off. "I don't know," Sid finally sends. Claude groans out loud. "For the love of..." "This isn't going anywhere. Okay, do you want to do it again?" Again, the blinking ellipse. Claude plugs his phone into his charger and leaves it on his nightstand, rolls over, and goes to sleep. He wakes up, slowly remembers last night's conversation, and checks his phone. One message from Sid. He opens it. "I'm not free until August 23rd, but..." And then an address. Claude raises his eyebrows. He copies it into Google Maps and... Yeah, that's a residential area. It's Sid's house. Interesting. He rubs the sleep from his eyes and texts back. 5 p.m., come to, and then his own address. Fuck if he's going all the way to Pittsburgh. Sid doesn't text him back, and he doesn't text Sid. He forgets about their technical standing date, and remembers again, week by week, day by day. All right, Sid. Floating in and out of his consciousness. Sid. He waits for Sid to text him and admit defeat, and say he's coming over. He doesn't, and neither does Claude. The date ticks closer, and Claude has no idea if he was even serious, and starts to think he was making the whole thing up. He looks back at their texts, and it definitely happened. That makes this a standoff, a dangerous one at that timing-wise, because it's not like they're close enough together to just hop in the car and head over. One of them is going to have to buy a plane ticket and a rental car and physically move through time and space to be with the other. And fuck if it's going to be Claude, if Sid's going to be such a dick about it. So he waits. And then it's the night of the 22nd. He checks his phone one last time, then books a last-minute flight to Pittsburgh that costs him a fucking fortune. He hates himself all morning. He makes breakfast, works out, and goes for a run with Harvey, and regrets everything. Why is he the one that's caving? Why are they even doing this? Why didn't he just text Sid like a normal human being and ask, okay, your place or mine? Who just sends an address? What's wrong with him? With both of them? His flight is supposed to get into Pittsburgh just before 5. He plans to text Sid when his plane lands. Be there in 20. Like it's no big deal. As if they're neighbors. He stops at a light on his way to the airport, luggage free, and drums his fingers on the steering wheel. His head is a steady mantra of, I can't believe I'm doing this, on repeat. He can see Sid's smug face in his mind's eye, opening the door and lighting up. The light turns green, and he shoots through the intersection as a silver SUV goes by the other way. The song changes, and he cranks it and sings loud because no one's around. His phone starts to ring. He shouldn't pick it up while he's driving, but he flips it over to check who it is, and the screen just says SC. He picks up. Hello?
Did I just pass you?
What?
Are you on the expressway?
In Philly?
I just passed you. Pull over or turn around or something.
What? You're here?
Yeah. Meet me in that McDonald's parking lot.
Wait, what? Sid hangs up.
Claude throws his phone onto the passenger seat in time to swing into the right-hand lane and pull into the parking lot of a McDonald's on the corner. He parks, turns the car off, and squeezes his eyes shut. Counts to 3. Then gets out. He's leaning on the door of his car when Sid pulls in. Sure enough, in a silver SUV. He parks a few spaces from Claude, shuts it off, and gets out. Hey. He comes around the hood and stands a few paces away from Claude, who inspects him, not used to seeing him out of gear so long after Worlds, and never before that. He's smaller and softer, but still big, the shape of his body obvious even through a deadly zip-up fleece, and his dark hair is fluffy and clean, and whipping in the wind.
Hey, Claude says back. What are you doing?
Sid won't look him exactly in the eye. He's looking just over his left eyebrow, and Claude can't tell.
Were you heading to the airport?
Yeah, Claude admits, unblinking. Sid's voice, so East Coast with that bro-y hint of a lisp, is more unfamiliar than he thought it would be.
I didn't think you'd come to mind, so...
I didn't think you'd come to mind. I left this morning.
Sid scrapes his hair back. Claude watches his knuckles pink with the cold.
Claude rubs his beard, and Sid's eyes flake to his hand.
What do we do now?
Claude looks at his shoes, ugly runners, up to his eyes, impossibly bright, brown or green.
You're already here, so...
Now Sid's looking at his mouth. It's not subtle because nothing about Sid is subtle. If normal people are butter knives, Sid is a broadsword.
Okay, he says, easy as that. It's tough to play hard to get when he already flew here. I'll follow.
Claude didn't expect Sid over and didn't tidy much. Not that he would have anyways. Seeing Sid in his apartment is the most bizarre thing, like he's been photoshopped in. He toes his shoes off in the entry and stands there looking around like he's appraising the place, and Claude is sure that he is.
Make yourself at home, Claude says, half sarcastic because Sid looks so uncomfortable.
Sid wanders into the room and he won't stop looking around. He's making a weird face. Or Claude thinks he is. But maybe that's just how he looks.
What?
Smells like you, Sid says. Like that's a completely normal thing to say to someone you have a violent public rivalry with, whose wrists you broke and refused to apologize for, who fucked you once in a dark closet halfway around the world. Who doesn't even know if you like them?
Huh. Claude wanders closer. Sits standing near his couch, for no reason, in the middle of the living room, just looking around. Claude has no idea what he's supposed to do, and even less of an idea of what's going through the labyrinth that is probably Sidney Crosby's brain.
Is that good?
Sid turns towards him. His eyes search Claude's face helplessly.
I don't know.
Stop saying that! What?
I don't get why you're doing this. Sid interrupts. I can't. I don't know who you're going to tell, and I don't get it or how you think it's going to work.
Work, Claude repeats slowly, curling his hair behind his ear. How it... I'm not doing anything. There's no work. I just...
He trails off, frustrated.
This isn't easy, and Sid isn't making it any easier by treating him like some fucked up predator, like it's impossible that he's as confused about this as Sid.
Fuck, I don't know, okay?
Sid huffs. I don't believe you.
Believe what?
Harvey pads into the room from the kitchen, blinking blearily. He comes right up to Sid and sniffs his hand.
Oh.
Sid crouches down. Hey, buddy.
Harvey.
Sure. Sid scratches him behind the ears, and Claude thinks, not for the first or last time.
Never thought I'd see this.
Harvey seems to like Sid well enough, which means something. People who don't like dogs and whom dogs don't like are bad news. Sid straightens up. Him and Claude are the exact same height, and the perfect eye contact is unnerving.
I don't care, Sid says, as if this is something he suddenly decided.
He's close enough that he can reach out and touch Claude's arm, and he does, pressing his thumb hard into his bicep, feeling him flex back. His hand slips off his arm to his shoulder and curls around it.
We fine. Whatever, let's.
And, just as awkward and clumsy as the first time, he pushes their mouths together. Claude closes his eyes as they roll back. Sid is earnest, if not strictly a good kisser.
He doesn't know what to do with his hands, and keeps one on Claude's shoulder like he's at a middle school dance, until Claude takes it in his own and moves it. And then Sid gets the idea and slips it back into his hair. His hands are weirdly big and hot, like he's burning. He feels Sid's tongue in the gap of his front teeth, which is disgusting. He sort of likes it. He tips his head, presses closer, and feels Sid stumble to keep up. He zips his stupid fleece down. Sid's t-shirt is soft and old and warm, and he's wearing a thin chain that Claude slips his fingers under as he runs his hand up his neck. He pushes the sweater off his shoulders, and Sid lets it drop, and it lands on Harvey, still sniffing around their feet, who yelps. Sid jumps. Shit, he breathes, and then laughs, self-conscious and tight. What? Claude kisses him again, deeper, in non-verbal shush. He doesn't want to think about it yet. He tugs on Sid's shirt, and they make it to his bedroom, still kissing messily. His room is dark and cold, but lived in to the point of being unkempt, unwashed sheets and tossed aside boxers, and a grimy water glass on the nightstand. He cracks the blinds, and Sid squints into the light. They look right at each other for the first time in what feels like forever, but Sid puts an end to that pretty quick, stepping back into Claude's space to kiss him again, bumping his knees back against the bed. Claude pulls his shirt off. Sid stares. He moves his jeans down and steps out of them, and Sid stares more, obviously flustered, until Claude pushes him to sit on the bed and motions for him to take his own jeans off. It's different now in natural light on a soft bed in the early evening, with lube, condoms, nudity, eye contact. Claude runs his hands down Sid's chest, feels him, kisses him, and neither of them talk. It's unreal. He figures if Sid's so awkward at kissing, he probably hasn't done this much, and works him open with his fingers, despite his embarrassed, babbled protests. He goes quiet when Claude lines up and eases inside him, inch by inch, careful and dripping with lube. He just clutches at his back and buries his face, and breathes hard. Short punches of air, barely makes a sound. He has a bruising grip. Claude presses his lips to his shoulder, and his skin tastes like salt and body lotion. He gets the hang of things pretty quick and learns how to angle his body, how to arch up and move in tandem and take it, like he learns how to do anything, everything, well. Claude gets lost in it, stupid and slow and trying so hard not to do any of the blatantly affectionate things he might normally do in bed, like talk. Sid comes in 2 minutes flat, but doesn't seem to mind Claude still going at it, which he does. He's so tight it makes him dizzy, and he doesn't last long either, and comes with Sid locked around him, both hands buried in his hair, ankles hooked. He stays braced above Sid, with his forehead resting on his shoulder, heart racing, breath still coming short. Harvey starts whimpering at the closed bedroom door. Claude groans. 1 second, he says and pulls out, chucks the condom out and opens the bedroom door. Harvey sniffs gratefully at his knees and trots into the room. Claude starts to say, "Don't," but Harvey jumps right up on the bed. Sid, now sitting up, with his back against the headboard, eyes him warily. "Ignore him," Claude says, waving his hand. "He's good." Sid nods curtly. Claude climbs back into bed and flops down next to Sid, with Harvey at his feet. But the second he does, Sid starts to get up. "I should be... Claude grabs his arm. "Are you serious?" "What?" "You're going now?" Sid looks horrified. "I thought I was supposed to?" Yeah. Christ, lie down. Sid deflates. He looks at Claude for a few moments, then lies carefully next to him, like there's something delicate he's about to disturb. We need to talk, Claude says finally, like he should have months ago. Sid continues to look quietly horrified. What are you... He points a finger between the two of them. What are we doing? Why is this? Sid works his mouth back and forth. I don't know. Why are you? You're being a baby. I am not. You are. Okay, fine. I'm... Because I want to. That's it. I'm not trying to do anything, funny business or whatever. I just want to. So that's why in Prague? Yeah, that's it. It's not the whole thing, probably, but it's what he's sure Sid will understand. Wanting someone or something is pure. It's a goal, an endgame. And Sid gets that. Anything else seems needlessly complicated at this point. I figure you do this a lot, Claude says to diffuse attention and save Sid from replying in kind, even though it's a lie. Sid must know he's lying, because he laughs derisively. I don't, he says like it's a confession. In their line of work, it kind of is. I've hardly ever. He trails off. Claude raises his eyebrows. Hardly ever? Like... 3, Sid says after a moment. You've been with 3 people? 3 times, Sid corrects. 2 people. You've had sex 3 times? Yeah, so... Claude rolls onto his back. Please tell me I'm not the second person. That's not counting you, no, so 3 and 5, I guess. Jesus, Claude says to the ceiling. How did you manage that? What do you mean? Claude sits up on an elbow and looks down at him. His hair is pushed back and his lips are red and... Yeah, he looks goofy. He always does, but it works. He's not a bad-looking guy. Famous and rich? I thought you'd be, you know... Claude lies back down. Sid shrugs. I'm not that interested. After I got drafted, it was always... You don't know what people really want. It wasn't ever worth it. He rolls his head on the pillow and looks over at Claude. You don't care about that stuff with people? You can tell who actually likes you most of the time. He closes his eyes. If they're also famous and rich, you figure they do like you, because why else would they? Jerk. What, you think I'm talking about me? Get over yourself. Sid shoves at him and cracks a smile. Jerk, he says again. They meet up 4 weeks later under the flimsy, unspoken pretense of Sid practicing and getting better at, or at least used to, sex. Sid shows up on his doorstep, in sunglasses with his hood up, no pens merged in sight, and Claude laughs at him. You look like a secret Hollywood starlet. I don't want anyone seeing me, Sid says, stepping in past him. People know where you live. It would be bad. You're having an affair, Claude says, and grins with all his teeth. You're cheating on your boys. On hockey. Shut up, Sid kicks his shoes off. You're coming to mine next time. That's even worse. People watch your house, camp outside. They do not. Claude kisses him mid-word. It's a little awkward and stiff. They're not used to each other yet. But after a moment, Sid drops his bag and smooths his hands down his chest. Don't know why you put your hood up, Claude mumbles against his mouth. The most recognizable part of you is your ass. Sid bites his lip. Claude tries to bite him back, but he can't stop laughing. Again, they stumble to Claude's bedroom without saying much else, undressing each other, falling into bed. The season has started, and their bodies both feel different than either remembers from the off-season, excitingly new. Claude sucks it up for the first time and gets smug when he's all dumb and grateful for full minutes after he comes. Sid tries, and he's bumbling at first, but catches on quick. It's not the best blowjob Claude's ever gotten, but it's by far the most satisfying, if that makes any sense. I thought about this, Claude tells him quietly, gently mocking. His thumb trace the shape of Sid's hollow cheeks as he moves between his thighs. Before, on the ice. You doing this. Sid chokes, and Claude laughs, bugs him. Don't stop, I'm close. And Sid pinches his thigh. He can't get a rhythm right, but it's decent anyways, and Claude comes into his mouth after a not unreasonable amount of time, arched off the bed, both hands in his hair. Sid spits, but looks proud of himself regardless, and Claude kisses him afterwards, full on the mouth, smiling. They lie next to each other, and Claude pushes his hair out of his face and laughs. Have you ever sucked dick before? No, Sid says, blatantly defensive. It wasn't bad. Have you? A bit, Claude shrugs, like that's any kind of answer at all. For someone who's fucked, what, two other guys? You don't seem nervous. No. Sid rolls onto his back. But I thought, 'cause I'm bigger than you, you'd make me, top? The word sounds brand new in his mouth. Claude stops himself from throwing back a reflexive, you're not that much bigger than me. You don't want to? He asks. Sid shakes his head. How come? Nothing. It's stupid. No, what? It's... Sid huffs, laughs at himself. Looks everywhere but at Claude. It's the only thing I don't have to think about. Claude looks at him. Oh. Yeah, it's like I don't have to make any decisions, not like if it was the other way. I can't be bad at it. I'm just there and you're there and it's easy. Oh, Claude says again. Sid staring at the ceiling, too impassive to be comfortable, and Claude remembers how he's seen Sid in bed, always hiding his face, or kissing and doing anything to be gone, and... Yeah, that makes sense. If sex is easy, he wonders what kind of things Sid finds hard. What time is it? Sid's still wearing his watch. He checks. 4:30? Did you get a flight out? Sid nods. 9:00. Okay. Claude sticks his arms up and stretches his shoulder until it pops. Want dinner? We can't. Not going out. Ever cook for yourself? Yeah, I'm not stupid. So let's cook. Claude rolls out of bed. Wear pants at least. Safety first. In the kitchen, Sid watches Claude like a hawk, and it's unnerving, until Claude realizes that he's still nervous, probably, that he's waiting for Claude to come out from behind a proverbial curtain and reveal that this was a joke all along. He tries to help chop vegetables until he proves slower than Claude with a knife, so he hops up on the counter and watches. I can cook, he says again. I just usually make the same stuff a lot. Meal plan-wise. Makes sense. Claude pushes a diced onion off a cutting board into a sizzling pan. Not fun food. Yeah, that's cool. He ducks into the fridge and pulls out two wrapped steaks. Like this stuff? Chicken, mostly. Here, Claude says, and tosses him the parcel. It hits him in the chest with a meaty thud, but he catches it. Make yourself useful, then. They finished a meal, Claude mostly sitting on the counter next to the stove, chirping Sid's cooking technique, Sid poking hot tongs at him, and they eat at the kitchen bar and talk about every team in the league except their own. Claude does the dishes afterwards, and as he's drying his hands, Sid comes up behind him and touches the small of his back. Claude turns around, and Sid kisses him. Again, not talking about it, and again, they end up in bed. Sid on his back, one of his legs hooked over Claude's shoulder. They both last longer, drawn out and heavy and intense. They lie facing each other after, Harvey curled up between their shins after being led into the room. Sid has blotchy color high on his cheeks and looks bewildered, like he always seems to after sex.
"You're not what I thought you'd be like,"
he admits after a long stretch of dozing silence. "You like dogs? And you own a food processor. What, you thought I'd be like a cartoon villain? Got a dartboard with your face on it?" Claude laughs. Sid looks guilty. "Tell me you don't have a dartboard with my face on it." "No," Sid yelps. You're different. "It's simple. I like food, friends, beers, outside, whatever." His eyes search Sid's face. "Not so difficult." Sid just hums shortly. Claude reaches out and touches a faint scar on Sid's arm with his thumb. His skin is weirdly soft and permanently winter pale. "What do you like?" he asks after a long moment, and lets his arm drop. Sid opens his mouth. "Other than hockey," Claude interrupts. Sid's mouth snaps shut. "Think about it," Claude teases. "You'll find something." They don't get a free day to see each other for another month after that. The only flight Sid can get on their first shared off day gets in the afternoon, but Claude says fuck it, that's fine. Sid shows up just after one, when it's too early to start drinking, and while it's never too early to fuck, technically, it's different. So, Sid is in his foyer, untying his sneakers, once again conspicuously free of Penn's gear, and Claude doesn't know what to do with him. Sid hangs his jacket up and crouches down to scrub Harvey behind the ears and make puppy noises in his face, which is unfairly disarming. Claude decided recently that he thinks Sid is attractive. He always has, mostly, but it's been changing recently. Sid is a weird-looking guy with these big, striking features, and depending on how you want to see him, from the neck up anyways, because below that there's no contest, he is or isn't technically good-looking. Claude is starting to think that he is. There's something endearing about him. He stands up and looks at Claude's lips, forever debating a kiss hello. He doesn't go for it. They've never been great at small talk, so Claude asks, "Do you, have any shows you're watching?" And Sid gives him a funny look. "Sort of. Why? Do you want to watch TV?" Sid furrows his brow and smiles. "Sure." It's sort of like house arrest, since they can't go outside. It's also like a slumber party. Sid sits on the couch, and Claude sits on the floor in front of it, his side pressed against Sid's cuff, and picks at a bowl of sunflower seeds on the coffee table. Sid makes them watch River Monsters, which Claude rips on him for, but doesn't make him change the channel. He also doesn't mention that he can feel Sid's hand at the back of his neck, fiddling with the color of his t-shirt. They watch 5 episodes of River Monsters, and Claude keeps passing Sid handfuls of seeds. "The other day, you asked what I liked," Sid says after an episode-long silence between them. Ignoring that "the other day" was a month ago, Claude says, "Is your answer dangerous fish?" Sid ignores him.
I used to want to be a hairdresser when I was a kid. It was either that or hockey, he says, idly stroking his fingers against Claude's nape. Claude chuckles. Don't laugh. It's funny. It is not. It is. Boy wonder cutting hair. You ever think you're in the wrong line of work? He tips his head and sees Sid looking at him out of the corner of his eye. That weird, smoldering look he gets sometimes that toes the line between flattery and creepy. He runs his fingers through Claude's hair and looks back at the TV. No, he says flippant, but Claude's sure that meant something. I'd let you cut my hair, he tells him. It grows back. Sid thumbs at the base of his skull. That it does. The funny thing is, Sid never stays the night, even though it's been months, even though they're cities apart. Sid always has a return flight, no matter how late. Claude hasn't asked, and Sid hasn't offered to ever spend the night since his leaving became normal so early on. He figures it's a Sid thing, not sleeping together, which makes sense. So when Sid comes over the week before Christmas, and 9 o'clock ticks by, then 10, and they've had the better part of a bottle of wine, Claude notices. They're tucked into the corner of Claude's giant couch, and Sid has one hand between Harvey's ears and the other on Claude's thigh, and it doesn't feel weird or forced, not like it used to a couple of months ago, when he swore Sid was afraid of touching him while clothed. Sid's been stressed lately, quiet and texting less, but today was one of their better visits. He got there early and hasn't stopped smiling the entire time, all chirps and jabs and touches he means to be incidental but aren't at all. They fucked when Sid first got there, like they usually do, then lied around in bed for a while, got dressed and got up, ate, didn't do much else. The difference is, it's already late and they haven't done it again, and they normally do. Their record is 5 times in a visit. Claude keeps score. He asks, when's your flight? And Sid's hand immediately stills on Harvey's back. I don't have one yet. He leans forward and lifts his wine glass off the table. His hand leaves Claude's thigh. He drinks. I thought I'd, go standby or something? I didn't really think about it. Bells go off in Claude's head. You want to stay? Sid stares into his wine. That would be okay? Sure, makes sense. Probably no seats now on Friday. He elbows Sid in the side. Anyways, you're drunk. I've had 2 glasses. I am not. You get on a plane and make a big drunken fuss, so better stay here. Fine, Sid laughs, and drops his hand back on Claude's leg. Don't twist my arm. Sid borrows a toothbrush. They both sleep in the nude. They aren't touching when they fall asleep, but Claude wakes up for a second when Sid moves in close behind him, wakes up again when his arm slips over his side. He blinks on and off every time Sid moves, awake and asleep, caught in a series of 10-second dreams that run together. Every time he wakes up, the sky is lighter. He wakes up a final time and feels Sid's nose pressed to his spine, halfway down his back, and his arm is thrown over his thigh. The sun is hardly up, and everything is washed in gray-blue and freezing cold. But Sid burns like a human furnace. Claude rolls over under his arm and Sid lifts it, mumbling in sleep, staring awake. After a moment, Sid scoots up so they're lying on the same pillow eye to eye. He blinks absently at Claude. Hi, he says softly and threads his fingers in Claude's hair, pushing it back out of his face. Claude's not sure he's even awake yet. It's like he's forgotten to be guarded and cagey and weird. Like he's not awake enough to be Sid.
Morning, Claude whispers back. I think the heating shut off.
Sid shifts closer and kisses him. Soft, closed mouth. He makes a quiet, contented noise in his throat that makes Claude heartsick, and he doesn't know why. Probably because Sid never sounds content. They pull back. There's something intimate about waking up with someone that isn't there when you go to bed with them. In the vulnerability of knowing that you look like shit and your breath reeks, and that you sleep next to them for hours and they chose not to fuck your shit up when they could have. Claude likes Sid. He doesn't get him, but he likes him. He's come to terms with that. But they still haven't talked about the enormous elephant in the room, and it's been months, almost half a year, and if there was ever a time to bring it up, it's now, when Sid is sweet and malleable and not all there. I didn't ever hate you, Claude says. Sid becomes visibly more awake. It's a game. It was what we did. I don't care if you hated me or still do, just... it doesn't matter. Part of him wants to get mad and push it further and say, you're the one who made it personal. You hate me. You hate all of us. You're petty. You're fucking nuts. But the anger recedes as quickly as it rose. They didn't know each other then. They sort of do now. Sid just looks at him. He holds his gaze long and level, as something a lot like panic creeps into his features. Claude doesn't know if it's, I still hate you and I feel bad about it, or, I don't know how to talk about this, or what, but he takes it. Whatever, he sighs, obvious defeat. Seconds tick by. Sid reaches out between them, stops, then draws his hand back. Nothing. Sid reaches for him again. He lifts Claude's forearm, brings his wrist to his mouth, and kisses it. He nods at the pillow they're sharing that Claude has his arm folded under. The other one, he asks, not looking at him. Dumbstruck, Claude shifts around and pulls his arm out. Sid takes that wrist just as gently and kisses it too, the faintly scarred wrists that still hurt in bad weather, that Sid slashed at every game, then aggressively and publicly anti-apologized for so long ago that it doesn't even seem real. Sid keeps his thumbs pressed to the tender inside of his forearms. It doesn't say anything, especially not sorry. He just keeps his mouth there, eyelashes dark on his cheeks. Claude talks a lot. He's a straightforward, upfront guy. He's friends with everyone. He's easy. But he gets the idea of not being that and needing your body to take over when your words can't, especially for someone like Sid, who's always trapped in his own weird, unimaginable mind. Claude finally chokes. Christ, Sid! And pulls on his arm, bringing Sid with it, rolling so he's under him and letting him box him with his arms as they kiss, lost in the wet heat of each other's mouth, immediate and urgent and deep. They don't say a word, but they move in sync. Claude fumbles the box of condoms from the nightstand into Sid's hands, knocks knuckles with him as he helps him get one on. Claude has done this a few times before, but never sober. It feels like the thing to do now, if Sid wants it, and it seems like he does. He gets between Claude's skinny legs and bows over him with his arms cradled around his head, mouth pressed to his cheek, and once he's inside him, he goes still, almost reverent, his breath coming shuddery. Claude's sure Sid has never topped anyone before. He's freezing cold anywhere Sid isn't touching, and he's still half asleep. But he lets his hands drift down Sid's sleep-warm back, lets his eyes shut,
as Sid moves his hips shallowly, careful, experimenting. Claude presses his face into Sid's throat and takes his chain between his teeth. It's sluggish, gross, heartfelt morning sex, and neither of them speaks. It isn't strictly an apology, but it feels like one. The next time they see each other, Claude tries to trick Sid into wearing one of his flyer's shirts after a shower so he can snap a photo. And the altercation ends in them wrestling on the floor of Claude's room, laughing as Harvey barks and circles them in worry. "I'd rather die," Sid says, out of breath, as he hangs over Claude with his wrists in his hands and his knees jammed into his. "Come on, baby," Claude leers up at him. "Rep your boy's team." Sid laughs and goes red. Can you imagine if that got out? Claude can see it. A cell phone photo of Sid in a Flyers hockey sweatshirt and nothing else. Him and his bare, massive thighs in someone's bedroom, all flushed and obviously fucked out. The world would crack in two. "Next game," he says. "Couple weeks. Loser wears winner's gear." He expects back talk, but Sid's eyes light up instantly. "You're on." Claude fully expects to win. He expects to win before the game, and during the first and second periods, and even, honestly, most of the way through the third. He looks frantically for Sid when the final buzzer sounds and the crowd goes ape, and he's too far away, but he's pretty sure that even then, Sid is looking at him. In his post-game, some guy asks, "We didn't see you and Sidney Crosby drop your gloves, and I think, you know, a lot of fans were maybe expecting that. What's going on here?" Claude laughs before he can stop it. He rubs his neck and says, "I don't. People grew up. And I think just, we're both past the point where that's something we want to do. It doesn't help the game. Let the hockey speak for itself, you know?" He watches the interview later, and his smile is three shades too bashful. The next time Claude sees Sid, 3 weeks later, Sid knocks on his door at the crack of dawn. He's grinning like he's just heard the best joke of his life, and he's got something black tucked under his arm. He whips it out. It's a long-sleeved Penguins hockey shirt with a little 87 at the top of the chest. "I didn't know what size you wear, but this?" He holds it up to Claude's chest. Claude slaps at his hands. "Seems right. It'll shrink up." "I'm not keeping it." "Oh, yes, you are." "I'm definitely not." "I'll give up taking a photo if you keep it." Claude considers this. He squints, then steps out of the doorway so Sid can get by. "Fine." As soon as they're inside, Sid shoves the shirt into his hands. "Great." Claude takes his own shirt off and puts the Penguins one on. It feels awful. He looks at himself in the bathroom mirror and he looks like a mistake. A bizarro Claude from another universe. He's still just wearing boxers underneath, and the whole thing is painfully intimate. He pushes his sleeves up and walks back into the living room to where Sid waits on his couch. When Sid sees him, he raises his hand to his mouth to hide his grin. "I can't believe this."
"You said no pictures."
"I won't. I'm serious. I swear." Sid holds his hand up, Scout's honor, but he's still grinning. "It, looks good on you."
"Shut up."
Claude sort of, almost, smiles. He crashes down on the couch next to Sid, and their knees knock.
"Wait."
He ducks his face into the collar of the shirt and breathes. "It's new, no?"
Not. "Is this one of yours?"
"Maybe," Sid says, his voice 2 octaves too high, and he starts to giggle in that stupid way he does, that Claude officially knows well. You said you'd keep it. Claude shoves their shoulders together, his arms folded across the logo of his chest. I hate you. Sid shoves him back. You do not. On March 13th, at 11 p.m., apropos of nothing, Sid texts him. I just said bless you to a cat that sneezed. And Claude realizes he's in love with him. It's instant and blinding, like Isaac Newton getting brained by an apple. He changes his contact name to Sid and his phone, then cracks a beer, either in celebration or sorrow. He has no idea which, because it feels like both. In his head, if not strictly in practice, he's been dating Sid for months. That's hilarious, he texts back. A week later, Claude goes to Sid's place for the first time, and it's surreal. He does what Sid did and dresses as nondescript as possible, flags a taxi instead of a rental car, and texts him when he's on his way. He can't remember the last time he was in Pittsburgh for reasons not related to hockey. Seeing where someone as private as Sid chooses to live and what he chooses to surround himself with is fascinating. Sid answers the door in track pants and a hoodie and a big smile. Finally, he says, and Claude scowls at him. That trip is a bitch. It's only 2 hours. I've been making it for months. Claude can keep scowling. He pushes Sid inside, elbows the door shut, and kisses him, all teeth and smiles. Yeah, you have. Claude spends the night and catches the earliest flight back to Philly in time for practice. He knows something is up the second he walks into the dressing room because the boys go dead, pin drop silent. At least 6 guys have their phones out. Jake says, but he leaves it. Looks are exchanged. Claude crosses the room to his stall and throws his bag down. Good morning. He looks around. What's going on? There's laughter from somewhere, or scuffling sounds. Simmer steps closer. Where were you last night? Claude fumbles his water bottle, keeps his expression steady. Just at home, chilling. Jake calls, do you live in Pittsburgh now? And everyone chuckles, if not outright laughs, and Claude's heart thunders. What? Have you not seen it? Someone whispers, dude, why would G check Deadspin? Simmer passes Claude his phone. It's an article. The headline reads, Sidney Crosby and Claude Giroux go grocery shopping together. Hell expected to freeze over any day now. There's a grainy, somewhat zoomed-in photo, but it's unmistakably them. They're each holding a different box of pasta. Sid looks mad, and Claude is grinning hugely, wearing a backward cap and a giant black hoodie. Claude remembers. They were arguing over brands, and it was funny how mad Sid got. Claude's hat was his own, but his hoodie was Sid's. Claude skims the text underneath and catches a few bits. The two were seen at Yada Yada last night, talking boisterously. Grocery store was near Crosby's home. Giroux was wearing socks with sandals, Yada Yada, no flying pigs spotted at this time, but they're keeping an eye out. You went grocery shopping with Sidney Crosby. Simmer's voice isn't mad, just unimaginably puzzled. He takes his phone back. No, Claude says carefully. I was just there. You were shopping in Pittsburgh? Yeah, I had to get...
You only have one basket, Raffle points out from over his shoulder.
He's not holding one.
That's not my problem.
The truth is that Sid's kitchen was understocked and depressingly utilitarian, and that after a bottle of wine, Claude decided he needed to show Sid what real food was and cook him dinner. At the time, it seemed like a good idea to go to the grocery store, so they did, and argued over everything, and smiled until their cheeks hurt, and then went back to Sid's and cooked dinner together and got even more drunk. Claude made Sid admit that his manicotti was the best manicotti he'd ever had, and afterwards they fooled around on the couch and fell asleep watching How I Met Your Mother. It was disgustingly wholesome. No one has said anything. Claude clears his throat. It's nothing, you know, we played together in Prague and a guy asks you to hang out. You're friends, Raffle interrupts. With Crosby? No. You hung out. Kind of. You're friends. I don't know, he says, which is absurdly true. Can you be in love with someone you're not friends with? Does seeing him a couple times a month count? Is Sid friends with him? Jake steps up and jams his shoulder against Simmer's. I mean, we don't care, but I thought you guys hated each other. He wishes for a second that there was an easy way to explain it, that Sid's weird as fuck, but he's not bad, that it just sort of happened. But that's impossible without explaining that they're sleeping together, which is something he's not ready to do. Not that he doesn't suspect the guys have a hunch about him. Before, I guess we did. He toes his shoes off. You know that shit's just media. Yeah, Simmer says with a shrug. All right, whatever. 10 minutes into practice and they're already joking about it. Ripping on Claude for it like they would anything else. The fans are going to be another story, but he doesn't know what he was so worried about. He sits in his car after practice, bone tired and wet and clean, insulated from the sounds of the street. He pulls his phone out and scrolls to Sid's name, only a couple back from the top of his messages. He knows this whole thing is a bad idea. Fooling around is one thing, but this is another entirely, and theoretically, he should break it off. Nothing good can come of it. Like they're the eldest sons of two warring families with all odds against them. That's exactly what they are. It's stupid, and he knows it's stupid, and melodramatic and childish. But he texts him anyway. When can I see you? Soon? Sid's typing bubble comes up right away. Claude smiles, locks his phone, and starts the car. His phone doesn't actually chime until he's almost home. How soon? The end.
Down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. Cast a spell on me, you hit me like the sky fell on me, and I decided you look well on me, so let's go somewhere no one else can see you and me. Turn the lights out now, now I'll take you by the hand, hand you another drink, drink it if you can you spend a little time, time is slipping away, away from us, so stay, stay with me, I can make you glad you came. The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts
I'm glad you came. The sky fell on me, fell on me. And I decided you look well on me, well on me. So let's go somewhere no one else can see you and me. Turn the lights out now, now I'll take you by the hand. Hand you another drink, drink it if you can. Can you spend a little time? Time is slipping away, away from us, so stay. Stay with me, I can make, make you glad you came. The sun goes down, stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came, I'm glad you came. Come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came, I'm glad you came.